Well, welcome everyone to this session sponsored by the Christian Women in Science group. It's a panel session. So if you folks do want to move in closer so we can have more of a conversational thing going on here, that would be wonderful.
All right.
Yeah, especially make sure we're not behind the post, which just,
okay. Come on up, Arthur.
Maybe join Arthur.
Kind of got really sort of two conversational teams here more than a panel and an audience.
I'm big on conversations.
That's right.
Well, we're glad you could come. What we decided to do for the panel session is we invited some women who are willing to share advice and their stories with you, and we really wanted to leave the time open for questions. So rather than having each speaker sort of introduce themselves and do their spiel, which sometimes eats up an entire panel session in my experience at conferences, we decided to sort of put the information of who's who up on the slide, and then you saw there was a handout in the back that explains a little bit more about the backgrounds of the folks we're willing to serve. And we're gonna jump in to questions. And the questions have been segregated into topics for each half hour. So the idea is we'll be able to talk for about 25 minutes and then you'll still have time to go to other sessions if you want to see other people's presentations. So the topic for this particular part of the session is early career issues. So some of the things we suggested that might be interesting were ideas on establishing connections, making education and job choices as a woman in science, Christian in science, and defining success when you're doing life planning, especially at those early stages. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and open it up to questions. I think we're in a small enough group that we can hear each other, but if I need to repeat questions, please let me know. Just let whoever wants to field them. I think I'm going to go ahead and close the doors so we can reduce the noise just a little bit.
Early career choices. Okay, so I'll leap into it to start with. I graduated from the University of California, Berkeley, with a degree in chemistry. And I had a choice, I suppose, of going to grad school or going into industry. However, my cultural background really precluded that choice. And I'll explain it this way. Neither of my parents ever went beyond high school. I had an older brother that did some college, and then an older brother that never went to college. So college was not a part of my familial culture. We were basically lower white collar kind of job, secretary and a purchasing agent for my parents. And I married very young. And so by the time I got my bachelor's degree with a 3.9 out of Berkeley in chemistry, I mean, I worked really hard and I got really good grades and Phi Beta Kappa and all that. So I, you know, the professors were actually talking to me about, go get your PhD. And I said, sort of, what's that? And I just couldn't consider it. My husband had not even been to college at all. He was a sailor in the Navy. And I thought, I'll be hurting myself. I don't know what it means to go to graduate school, and I'll be hurting my relationship with my brand new husband, and this is all too scary. So I never did. But, and I was not a Christian at that time, which is in contrast to a lot of the people here who are kind of lifelong Christians. So I cannot say that God showed me a career path, but it was 1975. And if you remember, oil prices were through the roof because we were in the oil crisis. And I graduated from Berkeley, which is right next to Richmond, which is the home base for Chevron. And this was the day when oil company, well, and I guess companies still do recruit on campuses. And they had, you know, come to UC Berkeley. And so I hooked up with an interview with people from Chevron, and they were so hungry for folks. They had so much cash, because they had a lot of money. And they wanted to expand their research facility. So even though I did not have a PhD, they took me on as a research chemist into their analytical services division. And I did all the things that people learn in graduate school in sciences. I learned on the job. They were patient with me. I mean, design of experiments. I remember one of my first performance reviews was, you need more practice in designing effective experiments, because I was just keeping doing these dumb things. And then I'd have one little mistake, and I'd do another. And I was wasting a lot of their time and money, frankly. But they were very patient with me, and I learned a tremendous amount on that job. So I think it's kind of interesting that even though you don't have enough experience perhaps from your contacts and your family to know what all your possibilities really are, you can trust and take a leap in the dark. And now I would say it in terms of being a Christian that, you know, God will help show you the right path for you, even if it's not exactly what a lot of your peers might be doing. So, some of my experiences. Ladies?
I had a somewhat different familial background in that my grandfather, my dad's dad, was a PhD, an oceanographer, and my father was a PhD in computer science.
The exact opposite.
So, you know, it came time and, well, okay. So I went to a small liberal arts college for undergrad and majored in biophysics and math, but I took, you know, Shakespeare courses and psychology courses and all sorts of, I traveled over to England and studied early English spirituality for the summer. So I had this wonderful liberal arts background, and I was really torn when it came time to decide, you know, what to do after graduating. But it seemed like higher education with an undergraduate degree in biophysics, there's not like a ton of career options for a bachelor's degree the way there is for engineering or computer science type fields. So it seemed like it was obvious to get another degree, but I wasn't sure which direction. So I had love of science, so I applied to biology programs, but I also applied to history and philosophy of science programs and got into a couple different PhD programs in both areas. So sitting there with a, you know, stack of papers and forms and where do I go? And I think it was really through mentorship, I mean, professors that I had, my parents, it was largely a financial decision in many ways because, you know, in the sciences, they're going to pay you to go and get a PhD, whereas in the humanities, it takes twice as long and they don't pay you at all. So that was a determining factor, but I was always really drawn to interdisciplinary work. And I think that's, the decision of what to do. I would say the decision of what to do after my PhD was a harder one in some ways in that, you know, the prescripted path for a PhD is sort of like if you don't go into academia, at least in my field, there's this sort of feeling that you've abandoned the proper course, that you should be really on that path and that's what your mentor wants you to do. But for me, I did have a very strong feeling of calling and the opportunity was there to come to work for BioLogos. So it's been very fulfilling because I feel like my scientific training is used, but it's also integrating in a, that in an everyday aspect. I'm really consciously thinking all the time, how do you integrate faith and science together? And I get to work with and meet a lot of really interesting people and scholars and scientists and church leaders and all of that. So different background. But it's funny to look back and see how I do feel like providentially, even though things weren't clear to me then, I could see how God was lining things up in such a way that, it works out. It seems like hindsight is 20/20, but not clear going forward how to make those decisions sometimes.
I'll take up where you left off about it not being clear how to make those decisions sometimes. Again, a different situation. When I started off in college and wondering where am I going to go in the world, I rejected my parents' advice. They had good advice, and I said, no, I don't want to do that. And that was a mistake. Their advice was good. So I never did get back to that point. And that was an opportunity that never came again. And I often wonder what my life would be like if I had done that. Certainly I would have become a gainful member, a productive member of society many years earlier, and perhaps avoided some detours I went on. So I guess that piece of advice was at least consider what older people in your family suggest, at least think about it. And the partner with that was that I didn't pray. I knew about prayer. Why didn't I pray? It wasn't in. It was the 60s. And again, to this day, I marvel that the Lord didn't just, that he kept coming back to me. And eventually, many years later, he activated that again. But how many detours might have been avoided? And then when I did start praying again, the Lord answers that kind of prayer about what would be a constructive, useful thing for me to do that would also be enjoyable. So the second one would be keep praying all the time, even if you're not sure about what, because the Lord does hear it and he does respond to it. And then in my case, it would be look for something that you would do even if we were still, even if the world were not fallen, if we were still in paradise with the Lord, what would you really enjoy doing? And then is there a way that links to something that you can find gainful employment in? Oh. Because you're going to have to work hard. So rather than something that might be trendy, choose it for something that you would enjoy.
So my path was one of really finding myself along the way, and it sounds like many people have kind of had a similar experience. I grew up in a home where I was expected to go to college, but not necessarily grad school. And as an undergrad, I majored in political science. And my senior year, I did an internship at the State Department, at what was then the Soviet desk. So I'm dating myself. And after spending a significant period of time there, I realized that in order for me to get beyond pushing papers around, I needed to get an advanced degree. But by then it was already my senior year and far too late to change majors. And so I was graduating with this political science degree, and I was really interested in international relations and particularly arms control. And so what I learned during my internship time was that it would be really helpful to have a technical degree so that I could understand how weapon systems that were being negotiated over actually work. And so I started writing letters to people who were in positions that I thought might be appealing, such as the Secretary of Defense. And lo and behold, I got a letter back from him.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, I basically what I ended up doing was I took the year right after graduation off, and I worked as an intern at a church as a youth director. And it was a fantastic experience. It was a time that I really actually did a lot of self-exploration and got to know myself better. And during that time, I applied to Stanford's master's degree program in aerospace engineering, and lo and behold, I got in, which I still look back on that and think that was an act of God. From political science to aerospace engineering without, you know, any time in between was kind of miraculous in and of itself. And from there, I got very interested in the space program. So again, here I was still discovering myself and what I wanted to do and what I was passionate about. And I think, you know, God is a very patient God with us. You know, he gives us that freedom that, you know, Bethany was talking about, to develop and learn and grow. And so he certainly showed that in my life. And so after completing the master's degree, I went to work for Lockheed Martin on the Hubble Space Telescope program and the space station program. And again, in kind of discovering my passions, I was in the right place in the right time, expressed the interest in doing so, and I was designated as Lockheed's corporate astronaut. And again, it was one of those things where what I tell my students now is, you know, discover what you're passionate about, what do you really love doing in life, and beyond that, discover also what you're really good at, because those may not be a parallel, you know, course. They may not overlap with
That's
each other.
Point.
But at some point, they probably intersect. And if you can find where your passion intersects with the things that you're best at, that's your sweet spot, is what I tell my students, is, you know, find out what you're passionate about and what you're good at. And that's probably the best clue that God has built into you as far as finding your career path.
Well, as the early career representative here, I'm very much still in the midst of some of the processes that these women have been reflecting on. And when I think back over, I'm 4 years out of undergrad now. And so when I think back over sort of undergrad in these last couple years, which has been very much dominated by the sort of existential crisis of figuring out what in the world I'm supposed to do with my life, the theme that comes up time and again for me is the importance of mentorship and how incredibly valuable that has been for me in figuring out I love this idea of the intersection between passion and skill set, because that's something I bumped up against a lot, was that some of the things that I loved passionately, I wasn't actually particularly good at. And figuring out how sort of to rearrange those things to find the intersection was really valuable. So when I went to college, went to a small liberal arts school, and I knew that I loved astronomy and physics, and I knew that I loved theology and religion, and figured I'd study either astronomy or religion while I was there. Started taking classes in both, and found that calculus and physics just scared me to death, and were not easy subjects for me. But religion really came very naturally to me. I was very much of a humanities-oriented sort of person. I was a good writer, I was a good thinker. But I just really loved astronomy, and I loved those classes. I was competent, but I wasn't acing things. And so I went to my advisor, and I was like, okay, who's my astronomy professor? And I was like, I want to do an astronomy minor, but I want to take all of those physics and math classes, and I'm going to do like history of science and philosophy of science, sort of trying any way to study astronomy without actually having to do the math and physics of it. And she played along with me for a semester or two until... eventually she sat me down. I kept trying to kind of poke at things, and she sat me down and she said, Faith, you love astronomy. You want to study astronomy. You're not the strongest math student, but I've had you for 4 semesters. You're capable of it. If you want to study astronomy, study astronomy. And having somebody who knew me well enough sort of like justify my fears, you know, not pat me on the back and tell me I'm capable of anything, sort of say, yes, you know yourself well, and this is, you know, not necessarily your greatest strength, but I validate that you are competent, that you are capable of this, made all the difference in the world to me. So I wound up double majoring in astronomy and religion, because why choose? And that was one of the best decisions I can look back on. And being able to have sort of both sides of my passion, both for the sciences and the cosmos, but also religion and people and relationships, was incredibly valuable to me. And so when I came out of college, I was trying to decide whether I go the science route, do I go the sort of religion ministry route. The summer between my junior and senior year of college, it's very typical for astronomy students have to write a thesis, and so you typically find a research internship, you do some research, you write your thesis on it. And so I applied to all of these research internships, because that's what you do, the REUs and NSF and all of that stuff, like 20 of them, and I didn't get any of them, which I wasn't particularly surprised about, but it doesn't feel good regardless. And I was heartbroken. I'm like, I don't know, what am I gonna do? And I remember I was studying abroad that semester. I'm on the phone with my mom crying because I'm a failure and I'm not gonna graduate and I'll never get a job and life will be horrible because I didn't get an internship this summer. She's like, God, you know, take a deep breath. God's in control, like give it some time. So I hung up the phone with her and I checked my email. And for no particular reason, I checked my spam folder, which I never do. And there's an email there from NASA that said, interested in an astronomy education internship?
Oh.
And apparently I had applied to a research internship at Goddard that I didn't get, but in my cover letter I had talked about how I wanted research experience because I was more interested in education than I was in research, and I thought research experience would make me a better educator. And the researchers were like, well, we don't want you for research, clearly. Mm-hmm. But we've got these educators. Let's pass your information on. Mm-hmm. And so I wound up getting this education internship at NASA, which I did after college. And it was at that internship where a pastor of mine had gone to a BioLogos event. And he emailed me, and he was like, Faith, I met this female astrophysicist at a BioLogos event who works at Goddard. You should have lunch with her and just talk about being a Christian in the sciences. So I emailed Jennifer Wiseman, having no idea who she is. And I'm just like, hey, I hear you're a Christian. We should have lunch. And by the end of lunch, she's dragged me to the AAAS to interview, to intern with the Dozer Dialogue on Science, Ethics, Religion program. And so it was and from there, I spent a year with Dozer, and then did some student teaching, went and got my master's in education, and now I just finished my first year of high school physics teaching. But the theme that comes back is the astronomy professor who said, you love it, you're capable of it, I believe in you. The individuals who took the time to read my application and think about not just what they were looking for in their program, but who I was as an applicant and what I had to offer the program. A pastor who cared about my values and helped me get connected. Jennifer Wiseman, who noted our similarities and took me under her wing for a year and really brought me into the science and faith conversation. And then from there, a number of teaching mentors who have really encouraged me in that sort of final. I have no idea what I'm doing with my life still, but I have a job that I get to have for the foreseeable future, which is success in my book right now. So, so all that to say, as someone who's still very much in the midst of figuring out what the rest of my career looks like, mentorship from older people, both in my own field and otherwise, has been hugely important.
I feel like I just would like to applaud for government. So yeah. We just got a hand for these five.
There you go.
For the questions. Yeah, I have a comment, just a brief comment, and I do have a question. The comment is, have you ever heard of Frederick Buechner?
Can you pick it up? Well, so Frederick Buechner is a writer and theologian, but he was he was the chaplain at the school that I did my student teaching at. Many years prior. He was back in the 60s. But anyways, yeah, Frederick Buechner is a very interesting writer.
How am I going to connect it then?
Okay. Oh, I don't know. Sorry, that just... I really like Frederick
Buechner.
I thought
you'd pick up on it because he's very famous for his definition of vocation. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Vocation is the place where our deep gladness meets the world's deep need. Mm-hmm. That's Buechner's definition.
Yeah.
We use that at Messiah College in our capstone courses for our seniors. Mm-hmm. And I put that right on my syllabus for science majors. So that's kind of where the connection is. I heard a lot of that, I think, in here. Mm-hmm.
I guess as a caveat to that, though, I think my career is more sort of drifted with the flow, and I feel like I could have been good at a lot of things and was interested in a lot of things. And I see some students getting all freaked out, like, I have to find my passion, and I have to find exactly what I'm good at, and there's one job out for me that's going to make me happy. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think sometimes God kind of puts some opportunities in your way, and you adapt a little bit, and you learn a little bit more. And so, that quote has always made me a little uncomfortable, to be honest. Sometimes it's like, there are some days where I love my job and I think this is my passion and my skill set, and there are other days I'm like, grading. Why did I do this, right?
That
broad picture thing, because you have to like more of your job than you dislike. Otherwise, you will burn out and you won't last and you won't be doing God's kingdom work in that job. But yeah, so sorry, I didn't mean to.
The more substantive comment was really that, as a man in this room listening to five women talk, I didn't hear anything. specific about experience as a woman, per se. This was all about life. Any of you could have been a man and said the same thing. And that's interesting that that's the case.
I would say that as probably the oldest one here. Yeah. I definitely did not go for my PhD because I was afraid of hurting the relationship with my husband.
That's true. You did
I knew
that.
I was smarter than right. he was, and I didn't want to show him up, you know,
yeah,
frankly.
No, wait, I'm sorry. You did
so, yeah, that's the only one that I experienced.
Yeah.
I would comment on that first, and then, great, we've got some audience comments here. I didn't mention it, but I'm quite sure, actually, that the assistantship that I got for my doctorate was that it was awarded to me because I was a woman and they needed to get women into the program.
Oh,
at that time,
I had similar experience.
There were not very many women in my field,
right.
And I'm quite ordinary in terms of intellect. And one thing I have seen over my career, I was going to mention it later, is I'm sure that would not be the case today, because with each 10 or 15 or 20 year increment, as there are more women in the sciences, it's more of more working their way into positions based on how capable they are, rather
mm-hmm.
than just women.
Instead
so the young women I'm seeing coming along today would be on the average much more capable than I was when I grew up.
Yeah, Aunt Lynn and I graduated from college the same year, 1975,
yeah,
and I was struck by the fact that you majored in chemistry.
Yeah, that was very unusual.
Yeah,
to
I went
that.
To Drexel, and there was not one woman in the chemistry department at Drexel
mm-hmm.
in the faculty, except a lecturer who did not have a doctorate.
Yeah.
I actually had her for one class, mm-hmm. but there was a couple of graduate students that were women, but it was you know, women in chemistry almost didn't exist
yeah,
at
yeah,
that
the
time
70s.
At the larger universities. So Cyan has 4 out of 6 of our faculty are women.
Yeah, a lot of things have changed
in
35, 40,
yeah.
45 years. I have often wondered why Chevron actually hired me to work with a whole bunch of PhDs when I did not have a PhD. But it was the 70s, and I think that they were trying to get to add women for diversity reasons onto the staff. And I had the best bachelor's degree record you could find on the planet, so they took me on. So I think there was an influence there.
Yeah.
I don't want to interrupt the discussion too much, but it's 1:28, so if you do want to sneak out to another section, feel free to swap. But I think we'll just keep going.
I think Leslie said something really important that has to do with being women, though. And Leslie talked about asking.
Hmm.
Asking for, you know, you wrote the Secretary of Defense.
Not
afraid to ask.
Right.
And I'm going to guess that was a theme. If you were picked as a corporate astronaut, you weren't afraid to ask.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that's something that, for me personally, has been difficult. You know, like in the last 20 years since I got out of college.
Yeah.
All right, longer than that. But and something that I have to coach my women students about.
Right.
Not being afraid to ask. It's
yeah.
okay.
Yeah, and actually that's something that I think God has really been working in my life consistently on, because I think I have been intimidated in certain circumstances, but I think the kind of asking was something that was a little bit built into me from my family background. I mean, I grew up with 2 brothers, and I was always determined that I could do whatever the boys did. You know, and so that was pretty deep rooted inside me, but still, I think it's been a bit of a progression where I've felt like God has really been working on me in terms of learning to stand up for myself better, and I do think that we as women in the church are often taught that we need to put everybody else first, and you know, be a role model of humility and servants, and sometimes that's a hard balance. It's like, yeah, we want to be Christ-like servants, but we also don't want to be doormats. You know, we don't want to enable others to step on us, right? So I think that is a real balancing act that we need to help the young women with. So that's a good point, actually, you brought up.
It's not quite the same thing, but it's a little bit the Mary Martha.
Right, yeah.
How many of you have all been told that you want to be Martha's? And if you want to be a Mary, you're kind of out of the cold.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
You want to learn.
Yeah.
You don't want to be an heir.
Yes.
Saying it's a dichotomy at all
yes.
is stupid, but that's
yeah, that's a good point.
The whether there are women in your field is better now for the hard science, for the sciences than it is for engineering. In my 20 odd years at K-State, the percentage of women in mechanical and electrical engineering has not changed,
mm-hmm.
and that's miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Chemical engineering and industrial engineering are nearly 50-50. There's less than 1 in 10 women. It's probably less than 1 in 20 women in mechanical engineering and in electrical engineering.
And those are closely related to physics.
Yeah.
And in physics, it's
physics
nationally about 1 in 20. Still, I think.
Yeah. Now, it does mean
been right
that if that's...
there for generations.
If that's where you want to be, if that's where your gifts are, you can write your ticket. You really...
Yeah.
They do.
It's an advantage.
And I must say that my career has benefited from being the only woman in electrical engineering. That's probably why I got the job I did. And I don't like it,